of wonder by the throbbing light machine. In the tea trance or under orders from the king and queen. Songs to aging children. So quickly, don't they hear the melodies in the chiming and the clicking and the laughing harmonies? Songs to aging children come. Aging children, I am. Strange like dying, crows and ravens whistling, lines of weeping, strings of crying, so much sadness and songs to aging children come, aging children.
With another Father Williams musings, just preceded by the song, great Joni Mitchell song, Songs to Aging Children Come, because that is pretty much what I've been doing with my myself recently, and I'm going to try to share some of that with you on this show. It's a little tricky. What I'm doing is I'm going back over the last 5 years of newsletters that I've written in the musings, Father Williams musings, some of you may have seen those, that I put in, which is just a way each, the beginning of each month, I think about sort of what's going on in my life. And in particular, I'm in the year 2007 now, and I've really, as I've been sort of editing these and getting them ready to be put into a form almost like a little magazine, they've caused me to, you know, to think back on my own journey into this third age. And as we talked about before, you know, third age is this, is the period of life that follows first and second ages. First age meaning that time when we're sort of getting ready, preparing for life. And our culture usually comes up through school, through, you know, before we start earning a living, start trying to amount to something outside through university or college or whatever it might be. The second age, and that's the one I, you know, I've spent a very long time, and many of us do, is where you're trying to amount to something. You're trying to be somebody, you know. I want to be somebody, that great old song. And what that age, the first age, the getting ready is one thing, but the second age, the focus really is on achievement, amounting to something, and that can be in a great many different dimensions, whether that is, you know, being a parent, whether it's having a career, whether it's being some kind of celebrity figure, you know, my God, whatever it might be. But what is really true in Second Age is that's the age where we tend to be looking outside to the world to get reflected back to us that we are amounting to something. So it's an external focus. And Second Age comes to an end or begins its decline when you begin to have that great Peggy Lee song feeling of, is that all there is? In other words, you'll find you're ready to move on out of Second Age when you can still do everything as well as you'd probably even better because you've got some more experience and more wisdom. But it just doesn't turn you on to be doing what you have been doing. In other words, it doesn't turn you on to be looking outside for some kind of recognition or advancement. It just seems pretty empty. And that's the signal that the portal is opening for you into Third Age. And now the problem with this, because what Third Age is the age of fulfillment. Third Age is where we've done we've gotten ready for life, we've done a pretty good job, we hope, of, you know, amounting to something, making a contribution, being somebody. And now, having done that, there's a new space that opens up, and that's just the space of being, that I want to just do what is fulfilling to me to do. And the primary shift here, a huge part of it, is that I'm shifting. It's no longer satisfying to me these reflections from outside. It doesn't matter that I'm particularly successful or, whatever. Though, yeah, it's nice, but that's not what does it. What now is mattering is something in me feeling like that I'm really being who I am. Abraham Maslow called it the being need, shifting from deficiency-motivated needs like survival and security and belonging and status, and those needs of Second Age where I'm trying to get something I think I don't have from the external world, to the being needs, which is I just want to become who I am and quietly go about that in the way that suits me best. So that's where we are. The problem, of course, with coming into Third Age is that we didn't used to live long enough to have it paid much attention to. You sort of got ready for life, you lived it, and then you kind of died, and nobody thought about it. Now, we'll live well, and many of us, most of us, will live well into our 80s, 90s, maybe even 100. So there's a huge arena called Third Age, generally roughly somewhere probably between in the 50s to the 80s, through the 80s maybe, where we just don't have many maps for, and the saddest thing is the culture is so oriented, and its marketing especially, to Second Age, that there is no reinforcement for leaving Second Age. It just seems like a terrible idea to get older. All the marketing stuff you get always makes it look good to be in Second Age forever. And as a great friend of mine said once, she said about the AARP magazine, because it's no better. She said, you know, it's true. AARP does put pictures of women who are 70 years old on its cover, but they all look 45. So what we're up against here as we move into Third Age, and as I've been exploring mine consciously for at least a decade, when we started the Center for Third Age Leadership back in 2001. And it's been very helpful to me in my own sort of movement and opening up, being able to make this transformation into Third Age. So what I'm going to do with you today is share with you some of the writings that I have done over the year 2007, and these are the musings that I kept from that year. And basically the format of the musings, I'd have a quote each month, and then sometimes in response to the quote, sometimes not, but I would then go on and do some thinking about where my own experience with Third Age was taking me. And for those of you who are in it, I hope you'll find them helpful. For those of you who are not looking forward to it, I hope it'll give you a little better perspective, be a little bit more open, that it is in fact the best part of life I've experienced so far. Now, are there drawbacks? Of course. Now, physically, I don't look as good, nor do I do as much as I used to do. But in reality, I am enjoying this life immensely. So let me start. We'll start in January of 2007. And this musing sort of, and I haven't gotten these really in shape yet, but I sort of titled this tentatively, The Paradox of Growth. And the quote I chose for the month of January 2007 was from Woody Allen. It said, "Students achieving oneness will move on to two-ness." Now, isn't that a great quote? Students achieving oneness will move on to two-ness. I was writing these right at the end of 2006, so that my musings began, it's the last day of 2006, and I feel over one of the humps in my transformation into this new stage of being called Third Age. I am finding meaning and joy in the chop wood, carry water elements of daily life, and as a result, I'm truly in the present moment a good deal of the time. If you don't know that reference to chop wood, carry water, there is one of the old Eastern, great Eastern mystical sayings is, before chop wood, carry water. After whatever, chop wood, carry water. In other words, life is just what it is. You just go on living it wherever in it you are. So then when I said that I'm truly, in the present moment a good deal of the time, then I had to take a step back and say, well, actually that may be a bit of an exaggeration, since my monkey mind is always going on about something or other. But I'm experiencing a consistent delineation between that ongoing babble of my monkey mind and who I really am. It's an evolving disidentification that seems to have reached a point of stability, and perhaps even permanence. Now that's interesting, and I'm achieving some kind of disidentification. And what I mean by that is I'm not my mind, nor am I my second age self, particularly. I'm something more peaceful and continuing. I'm something that can observe my mind and everything else with detachment and compassion. I'm having the experience of being the observer I've been reading and teaching about for years. In my way of being, because I'm pretty heady, I always can conceptualize something and in fact teach it before I actually start to living it. Those are my paths into starting to live it. So I have been, this notion of the observer, there's a place in you that you can step quietly sort of back into and just watch what's going on. Even watching your own emotions and your own actions is a place I've been reading and teaching about for years. So I refer back to in November, I used P.D. Ouspensky's quote to open the November newsletter, because it connects here. And what this quote said was, "It is only when I realize that life is taking me nowhere that it begins to have meaning." And we better say that again, huh? "It is only when I realize that life is taking me nowhere that it begins to have meaning." And for me, another way to talk about the difference between second age and third age, in third age, I really do realize, I begin to realize that life is taking me nowhere. And then it begins to have meaning. When I'm living in the second age mentality of always thinking life is supposed to be taking me somewhere, then I'm never present because I'm always focused on where I think I should be getting to next and whatever form that takes. So then in my musings, I went on to say about a Spensky quote. I said, I used this quote because I knew it was important and true for me and others. 2 months later, I understand it at a much deeper level of meaning. Let's see if I can explain my new understanding coherently. Even though I'm being present to and enjoying my cleaning, my mowing, my shopping, etc., I'm still pretty regularly plagued by the feeling I ought to be doing something more significant, like writing or teaching or influencing some world or other. Whenever these old unconscious imprintings take over, I'm no longer in the present moment. My chop wood, carry water completeness evaporates into thin air. And I imagine many of you experience the same thing. There are certain times you can just be so present and life is just fine, exactly as it is. And then you think, well, that's not enough. Is that all there is? That's not significant enough. So this thing for me anyway, what I can look at in my life is I have been addicted to significance. That might be a good title for this particular set of musings. So I go on and I say, but I can now remember most of the time that one thing only seems more significant than another because I think there's somewhere more important to be than where I am. This notion of needing to get to somewhere else is just as deeply destructive as the notion I'm a corrupt being who needs saving from himself. All right, that's my own take. One of the many people I've learned from was the Catholic priest named Matthew Fox, who actually got defrocked and became an Episcopal priest because he raised up the notion that original sin was just a horrendous, you know, way to, you know, burden people with the fact that somehow they're not okay. And that's what I was referring to when I'm, to think I need to be somewhere else is just as deeply destructive as the notion I'm a corrupt being who needs saving from himself. What Matthew Fox did, and makes enormous sense to me, is he, instead of original sin, he put forward the notion of original blessing. That we come into this life as one of the universe's creatures. And we, like Desiderata says, we have a right to be here. We are like the stars. And so the notion that somehow I come in corrupt and need to be fixed, or the notion that somehow where I am or who I am isn't good enough, that to me is, those are both two life-killing frames, and they're inextricably linked. It's precisely the belief that I'm not okay that drives me to be somewhere else. And it is the illusion of being able to go somewhere else that keeps me from recognizing this moment in time is all I've got and everything I need. Now, isn't that those are my best moments when wherever I am, just like right now with whoever's out there, with you, and I'm just working with these things I've written earlier, you know, 3 years ago, and I'm just totally here and present and really loving just doing this. So, you know, if you are out there, thank you for listening. I'm certainly enjoying doing this with and for you. So anyway, that ability to be in this moment and know that it's all there is and everything I need, well, you know, when you think about it, what a huge shift in belief systems this is. From our earliest childhoods, we've revered advancement and worshiped progress, you know, for ourselves and for the world. Worshiped progress, isn't that? I mean, do you find that in you, that somehow progress is just good, no downside to progress? That's what we want. We want to grow. Isn't growing good? But it's only within the last few decades, you know, as we've all had to face up to the toxic byproducts of unbridled expansion, that I've begun to question the simplistic religion of one-directional growth at all. I always thought it was good. Things like bigger is better, new and improved, progress is our most important product. Remember that from GE back in the 70s? Progress. Progress is good. And on and on and on. All these marketing slogans, all of these mindsets, simplistically one-directional. No paradoxical complexity here. Growth is progress, good. Remaining constant is stagnation, bad. Shrinking is dying, terrible. These are the mantra of my lifetime, and how disastrously incomplete they are. Of course progress can be good, sometimes. Of course stagnation can be bad, sometimes. Of course shrinking can be terrible, sometimes. And they can all be the opposite and neither too. How many times do I have to hear some version of Ecclesiastes before it sinks in? Like as the birds made Ecclesiastes into the song, turn, 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 to everything, turn, turn, turn. There is a season, turn, 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 and a time to every purpose under heaven. A time to build up, a time to break down. A time to dance, a time to mourn. A time to cast away stones, a time to gather stones together. So, it's all okay. It's all good sometimes, and it's all inappropriate sometimes. So Woody Allen's quote, "Students achieving oneness will move on to two-ness," not only makes me laugh, but captures what I'm learning in 8 words. Students achieving oneness will move on to two-ness. For 30 years, this student, that is me, thought I was achieving oneness by discovering and living a right way called growth. Now, I've ended up moving on to two-ness by relaxing into the present and enjoying wherever, you know, whatever I find here. Sometimes it's expansion, sometimes it's contraction. Like breathing. Isn't breathing a fascinating metaphor for balance? How much would we, how well would we do if we just decided to inhale and not exhale? There is expansion, the inhale, and contraction, the exhale. One of my teachers, a wonderful, wonderful man named Atum O'Kane, who is, in a sense, Sufi by, you know, training and learning, but really is just an eclectic, like many of us, who has just taken the best he's found from all his traditions, including Catholicism and his Irish heritage and the Sufi teachings. From him I learned and built into my practice a little four-line saying that I do every day, and it's really helpful to me, just as a reminder, and it goes like this. There's no place to go. There is no thing to do. Be here now. It's all for you. There's no place to go. No thing to do. I'll be here now, 'cause it's all here for me and you. Now I really do understand what Ouspensky meant by, it's only when I realize that life is taking me nowhere that it begins to have meaning. Or as John Lennon put it, another of my favorite philosophers, life is what happens to you while you are busy making other plans. And so that's what this old guy was thinking back in the end of 2006. And I just thought we're right about halfway, coming up to halfway through, and I thought I'd just offer you a song, you know, that just because I need a little, you know, take a deep breath and get ready for the next one, the next set of musings that I'll share with you on this program. And one of the songs that, one of the songwriters who has always helped me think further ahead, is Leonard Cohen. What an amazing person he is. So what I thought I would do here is play you one of his songs, but this one's sung by Judy Collins. It's Suzanne. And it's about just being in that present moment and how wonderful it is to find someone who can help you be there. And often, the people who can best help you be there they're the ones who, you know, don't look so good to our second aid marketing mentality. So here we go. Judy Collins, Suzanne.
Suzanne takes you down to a place by the river. You can hear the boats go by. You can spend the night forever. And you know that she's half crazy. That's why you want to be there. And she feeds you tea and oranges that come all from China, and just when you want to tell her that you have no love to give her, she gets you on her wavelength and lets the river answer that you've always been her lover. And you want to try with her, and you want to travel blind, and you think you'll maybe trust her, for she's touched your perfect body with her mind. And Jesus was a sailor. Spent a long time watching from a lonely wooden tower, and when he knew for certain only drowning men could see him, he said, "All men shall be sailors then until the sea shall free them." But he himself was broken long before the sky would open, forsaken, almost human. He sank beneath your wisdom like a stone. And you want to travel with him. Touched your perfect body with his mind. Suzanne takes you down to a place by the river. You can hear the boats go by. You can spend the night forever, and the sun pours down on Our Lady of the Harbor, and she shows you where to look amid the garbage and the flowers. There are heroes in the seaweed. There are children in the morning. They are leaning out for love, and they will lean that way forever. Suzanne holds the mirror, and you want to travel with her, and you want to travel blind, and you think maybe you'll trust her, for you've touched her perfect body with your mind.
Judy Collins and Leonard Cohen's song, Suzanne. And that just captures for me so beautifully some of what, you know, what this possibilities of third age have opened up for this old guy. All right? So this is Father William with a Father William's Amusings coming to you from WMRW in Warren, Vermont, 95.1 FM. And just delighted to have the opportunity. Thanks to all of the people at WMRW who helped make this possible for us and our little community. It's a wonderful thing. So now what I'll do, I'll go into the second set of musings for this program, okay? This was doing in February of 2007. It was when I was getting these musings ready. And the quote that I started these off with was a pretty well-known one. To be or not to be? That is the question, okay? To be or not to be, that is the question. And, of course, I'm going to take it a little differently than both Will and Hamlet Minute, but let's see where we go with this one, okay? What I wrote was, now that I've passed through first and second ages, maybe I haven't passed through them, but I like to think I have, where I was focused on living up to external expectations of parents, of teachers, of clerics, of peers, of bosses, of institutions, of gurus and marketing campaigns. You know, if I have gotten somewhat unengaged from those expectations, what's next? Carl Jung, who I think is one of the most brilliant people about the process of third age, one of the things he wrote was, we cannot live the afternoon of life according to the program of life's morning. For what in the morning was true will in evening become a lie. Now isn't that great, a great quote? We cannot live the afternoon of life according to the program of life's morning. For what in the morning was true will in evening become a lie. Now, what might Jung mean by the program of life's afternoon, or life's morning, or any time of life? It seems Shakespeare might have known, even if Hamlet didn't, and it's more the work of, that it's, this time of life is more the work of being than doing. Now, if I've done first and second ages reasonably well, I'm no longer much interested in living up to anybody else's expectations. As I get past this, I get truly curious about who I am and how I might fully become that unique being. I'm also drawn to experience my relationship to the larger, I like to call it, because I'm pretty wide open to what that larger might be, whether it's the universe, the oneness, God, the great randomness, whatever it suits you or anyone to call it is okay with me, as long as what we, you know, can kind of agree on is we don't have a monopoly on it. We, none of us knows what it is. We're taking the best guess we can. I mean, if you get into that trip where you want to tell me I have to understand the larger the way you understand it, or else something terrible is going to happen to me, like fire and brimstone, please don't come near me. Don't bother me. You know, I will sort my life out for me. You sort your life out for you. But like Joni Mitchell sang so well, let's not be the person who goes around laying their religion on their friends. Yeah. Anyway, for me now in this third age, becoming myself and feeling a really true connection, and I'm capitalizing the self, myself here, the self part, that there's a larger self in me than the little self that what Jung and other psychologists call the persona. Meaning, yeah, there's an ego, there's a persona that I've built up to interface successfully with the world in first and second ages. But it's really an act. It's a facade. It's something I use to manage things that often I'm fearful of. That little self is not me, not the true being, not the being of me that came with original blessing. And that's why I use the capital S for a self when I try to talk about that part of me who I want to meet, I want to know, I want to learn and to become now. And I think becoming that larger self and feeling a true connection with the, you know, whatever the larger, you know, whatever it is, whatever you are, all through this infinity we live in, I think that's the business of life's afternoon. And thinking we should stay forever young will not help us get on with that. Yeah. Now, this is not new stuff. Countless others have offered the same perspective, and I'm going to share some of those perspectives with you. Agatha Christie wrote, "As life goes on, it becomes tiring to keep up the character you invented for yourself. And so you relapse," isn't that her? "You relapse into individuality." Isn't that a great phrase? "You relapse into individuality and become more like yourself every day. This is sometimes disconcerting for those around you, but a great relief to the person concerned." So that's Agatha Christie. And I think it's fair. You've worked so hard not to be who you are because you want to be who you thought you should be, that, and it just gets too tiring. You relapse into your individuality, into that larger self of yours, and you start getting on with being who you are. Linda Ronstadt, in one of her songs I loved way back in the 70s, said it this way, "I am exactly what I am, and not the way you'd like to see me be. I look outside long as I can. Then I close my eyes and I watch my world unfold before me." Isn't that great? I remember that song. "I am exactly what I am and not the way you'd like to see me be. I look outside long as I can." Yeah, I give it a shot. I try to live up to all those things outside of me. "And then I close my eyes and watch my world unfold before me inside." If somebody wanted to give me a gift, I'd love to meet Linda Ronstadt. Well, there's so many. Joan Baez, you know, Bob Seger, Kris Kristofferson. So many people have spoken to me. Leonard Cohen, Dylan, Judy Collins, Joni Mitchell. There are just so many. And they have helped me all along this journey. I mean, thousands and thousands of people have helped me on my journey, and probably virtually none of them know it. At least they don't know it for me specifically. And isn't it great to think of yourself that way? That probably you have helped in any number of people along their way and not even known you did it. And so I just think the gratitude to all those who have given me a little nudge, a little guidance, a little help along the way. Boy, I am grateful. Thank you. Now, another person who I'm not sure who she is, but I love the quote I came across. Her name is Elizabeth J. Canham, C-A-N-H-A-M, Elizabeth J. Canham. And she said, "There is no freedom like seeing myself as I am and not losing heart." Isn't that a great quote? "There is no freedom like seeing myself as I am and not losing heart." I think of adolescence, but even my adulthood, I look in the mirror and there's a pimple, or I don't weigh way I am from a moment. Oh, gosh, how awful that is. Fix, get the clearance, whatever it is, we need to get it. Let's get it here, whatever it might be. So I just there is there. That's a wonderful statement of freedom. There is no freedom like seeing myself as I am and not losing heart. Elizabeth J. Canham. And one more for you is this is Joseph Campbell, whose great slogan or just simple three-word command for life, instruction for life, was follow your bliss. He such an amazing man. He's the person, if you don't know, who was, his field is mythology and really understanding archetypes and all looking across all cultures and seeing the similarities they have in their mythologies and in their archetypes and so on. He was the guy who advised Lucas in the making of Star Wars, because that story of Star Wars occurs, it's called the hero's journey, and occurs in every culture. You know, where somebody like a Luke Skywalker, who's just kind of bumbling along, somehow, not because he seeks it so much, but he just gets caught up in something unfolding that is just that only he can do and is needed desperately by the larger world or the larger planet. And he's given gifts along the way of a teacher, Obi-Ben Kenobi, and then of a lightsaber, and it just goes on. And that whole story of Star Wars is very profoundly about the mythologies that go across all cultures. When it turns out that Darth Vader, the evil symbol, is his own father. Isn't that fabulous? I mean, there's so much that goes on. If you ever want to just take a course in mythology and see all the possibilities, Joseph Campbell's work with Star Wars and his own interview, 6-tape series of mythology, is just absolutely worth taking time with. But here's what Joseph Campbell said. And along with follow your bliss, he said this, which it is so true for me, still true. It's 3 years after I wrote this, and I'm still struggling to be much more into being and relaxed into who I am than into doing and trying to measure up to something. Joseph Campbell said, "We're so engaged in doing things to achieve purposes of outer value that we forget the inner value. The rapture that is associated with being alive is what it's all about." I'll do that one again. "We're so engaged in doing things to achieve purposes of outer value that we forget the inner value. The rapture that is associated with being alive. That's what it's all about." Joseph Campbell. And if I can return just for a moment to the quote that opened it from Hamlet, "To be or not to be, that is the question." It's important, you know, I'm an old English teacher, so I can't go away without saying, of course, Hamlet didn't mean third age by it, because he goes on, what he really means, "Do I take up arms against a sea of troubles, you know, or do I sit and suffer the slings and arrows of outrageous fortune?" Hamlet was really asking for guidance in what kind of action to take. He wasn't talking really about being. But I'm using that quote, "to be or not to be," as an inspiration to myself to keep reminding me whenever I feel myself getting too caught up again in the expectations of others, in the external world. I just keep, using that. Hey, remember, Bill, to be or not to be, that's the question. And it, of course, sometimes I don't mean that being is better than doing. I mean there's a balance of being and doing that is appropriate to be in third age that involves much more being than that balance did, that paradox of being and doing did in second age, where it involved much more action and activity. So I hope that you... hopefully this is a little bit helpful to you, too. I'm going to be able, I think, to get in one more month of these musings from March of 2007. This will go well. This will go well with this. And I opened this quote back with, I call this sort of tentatively titled this, "Third Age and Littleness." And the quote I used was from Benjamin Disraeli. And he said, "Life is too short to be little." Isn't that great? Life is too short to be little. And I chose that quote because just before that I'd received a letter from a dear third age friend of mine, Frieda Holt, who describing a bit of her third age, and as I read you a few of her paragraphs, you'll understand, God, how different this is than the one you're living, old Father William, who keeps claiming to be a monk and wanting to get back to the solitude of his monastery. Look how alive this woman is. So Frieda wrote, she said, I went down to Virginia Beach for the weekend of my birthday, celebrated Christmas with H.J. and Joyce on Thursday, did 20 hours of square dancing at the Sweetheart Convention on Friday, Saturday, and Sunday, then birthday dinner with H.J., Joyce, and Joyce's parents Sunday night, home on Monday, which is in Penn State, you know, out in State College, Pennsylvania, in time to go square dancing Monday night. On March 1st, I'm going down to Atlanta to watch my grandson play in a hockey tournament at Birmingham, Alabama, on the weekend. Then I'll spend the week at a timeshare in Nashville where I can square dance every night and watch David in another hockey tournament that weekend in Nashville. Then a couple of days in Atlanta and back to Alexandria, Virginia for another square dance convention for the weekend. Home on Monday in time for our square dance class. I normally dance every Monday, once a month on Tuesday, every Wednesday, and drive to Altoona every Thursday for advanced lessons. I've already signed up for the Tumbling Leaves Convention in Bennington, Vermont in October. Whew! This old monk, this old Father William goes, whew! The energy of this much activity compacted into so little time seems unthinkable to me, and I wrote back to Frieda. I said, how much fun we are both having in our third age, and such different lives. You are glorying in the activities of square dancing, traveling, and attending to family, whereas I am delighting in daily solitude, writing, and puttering about the house and yard. Your life would overwhelm me, and mine would probably be way too empty for you. I'm very grateful to Frieda for her wake-up call. It helps me remember that what lies at the heart of third age is individuation, that term of Jung's. And that, of course, means the incredible, infinite diversity of life, and that our third age is about seeking our individual selves, individuating ourselves into the larger being that we are. For me, having lived a very active, public, and relation-filled life earlier, my individuation is taking the form of withdrawal into solitude and my inner world. This feels very right and good for me, but it clearly would not be right for Frieda, and maybe for many of you. I may have overemphasized my form of individuation earlier in these newsletters, and I want to use this one to honor the diversity of third age paths being traveled. What I mean here is because I did dwell on how useful it was to me to find, to withdraw into the silence, to go into my monastery, to really be quiet and sink deeper into being rather than acting, I'm quite clear now that I overemphasize I implied somehow doing it my way is a better way. It's not a better way, and I'm very sorry about that. So what I'm doing here, I hope, with Frieda's encouragement and example is just sort of say, you know, whatever way you're doing your third age, whatever way you're really becoming, individuating, becoming who you are, fabulous. Fabulous. You know, as long as it's coming from inside, you can't get it wrong. And there's a poem by David White. It's W-H-Y-T-E, who I just love. If you ever get a chance, and it's really good to hear him read his own poetry because he is a master at it. But David White, and this one is called Sweet Darkness. And to me, it presents the very personal essence of individuation. And it clicks right back to Benjamin Disraeli. A quote from that poem is, David says, to learn anything or anyone that does not bring you alive is too small for you. To learn anything or anyone that does not bring you alive is too small for you. And isn't that just the same as Benjamin Disraeli saying, life is too short to be little? Yes, it is. Life is too short to be little. Well, my friends, this is Father William, and that's about all I've got to say today. I hope that this is helping me greatly. I hope it's of some interest to you, because as I look at these musings and elaborate them to myself, I see what I even want to make clearer for myself and hopefully for others as we go. So what I'm going to do is give you a little bit of music, another piece of music, as soon as I can find that here, and just I know what I want to do, but I've got to find this on my iPod, so I'll try chatting at the same time that and I'm going to try to go and find another one of Leonard Cohen's, because it makes me think right now of a great friend of mine. Here it is. Now, wait. There, we're close. We're coming. We're going to find this one of Leonard Cohen. Okay. There we go. And this one, you may not know it. It's called The Sisters of Mercy. And I want to play this to a couple of dearest friends of mine who are struggling so hard right now with their lives, and hopefully this may I hope to you and anybody else out there who is struggling, you know, with your lives at this point. I've been struggling mine quite a bit this summer. My God, I'll tell you, it's been a full summer, but if you're struggling, I hope you run into the Sisters of Mercy too sometime very soon, because it's very, very important.
All the Sisters of Mercy, they are not departed or gone. They were waiting for me when I thought that I just can't go on. And they brought me their comfort, and later they brought me this song. Oh, I hope you run into them, you who've been traveling so long. Begins with your family, but soon it comes round to your soul. Well, I've been where you're hanging, and I think I can see how you're pinned. When you're not feeling holy, your loneliness says that you've sinned. Is a leaf that the seasons tear off and condemn. They will bind you with love that is graceful and green as a stem. sleeping, I hope you run into them soon. Don't turn on the lights, you can read their address by the moon. And you won't make me jealous if I hear that they sweeten your night. We weren't lovers like that, and besides, it would still be all right. We weren't lovers like that, and besides, it would still be all right.
Leonard Cohen, the Sisters of Mercy, I do hope you run into them soon. Well, I want to thank you all out there for listening to this. It's just been, for me, this is an intriguing show. I don't know how it works for others, but it helps me really deepen my own thinking about what's unfolding in my third age. And life is just good. Isn't life beautiful in Vermont, you know, and there's even a little bit of rain. Hope you all have a wonderful, wonderful 7 days. And we'll see you here next week at 11 a.m. And again, thanks to everybody who makes this wonderful WMRWLP 95.1 FM possible for us as a community and all.